Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now, Irish band The Script have sold over 12 million albums. They packed out stadiums all over the world. And they're back with a great new single, Both Ways, and an album and live shows to come. And I'm delighted now to be joined by Script frontman Danny O'Donoghue. Welcome, Danny.
How are you doing, Brendan? You're right. Good to be here.
Great. And Danny, you picked five pieces of music for us that have special meaning for you. So we'll kick on. I presume it was the house full of music growing up. Your dad, Shay, was a musician, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was in a band called, a few different bands, but one called the Debonairs, another one called the Dreams. And he had a lot of success. He wrote a song called Baby, I'm Your Man for Dickie Rock. Do you remember Dickie Rock?
Spit me, Dickie.
Of course I do.
and he was a very prominent songwriter, and then kind of left entertainment, still stayed in the entertainment game, but he raised a whole family full of musicians. My brother Dara was in a band called the Big Geraniums. They had massive success in Ireland.
Yeah.
My other brother Ian was in a band called Revelino.
Who were a great band? They had a huge
following too. And my mum, God rest her soul, she's the only woman in Ireland to have all of her sons on the Late Late Show in three separate bands.
Brilliant. So what kind of music was it at home? Everything.
It's funny because I guess that's how I found my own music was, you know, hip hop, R&B and soul were the only ones that were left for me. You know, my sister was into Red Hot Chili Peppers and Hoodoo Gurus. My brothers were all ska and Irish and punk and mad stuff and rock as well. My sisters were total pop merchants. So there was all of those were taken, and then it seemed to be the only one left was like rap or soul or that kind of vibe. So I've got a bit of a mixed bag of stuff for you today.
Yeah.
It's a bit all over the board.
And come here, what age were you then when you realised, actually, I have music in me? When did you start writing songs?
You ever hear these artists where they're saying, like, I was in the womb and I came out and I knew then. I'd grown up around it. And I think by the time that I was 10, I had almost 20, you know, the 10,000 hours. I think I had about 20,000 hours just of from sitting at the foot of my dad. He was a piano player. I grew up in a massive performing household. So I suppose about five or six, I have memories, at least my mum has memories of me being reaching up to the piano when I couldn't even see the keys and starting to play on it and stuff. So yeah, it was quite young. And then I guess it progressed when I was about, in school was kind of where it mainly came, because I was sitting at the back of class, not really doing too much. And the teachers were always calling my mum into class and basically saying, look, he's sitting at the back of the class. He's writing songs. But have a look at them because they're not bad. Pretty fun.
So then your first choice today is, I think we realise in retrospect that this was a great band. People are probably a bit snobby about them at the time. This is a classic from 1985. Why Take On Me by A-ha?
Well, because it was the very first record when I had my own money and my own choice to go and buy a record. I bought two records on that day. I think we went to Abbey Discs or something. And my dad was like, I think he was fancying me getting something like a Radiohead or a Leonard Cohen or something like that. And I went straight for the Monkees, right? I went straight for the Monkees, Daydream Believer. And the other one was a wild card, but just because I liked the look of the front cover on Take On Me. And I took it home and I spanned Daydream Believer. I was a big fan of the Monkees anyway, growing up. I mean, I didn't know that they didn't play. I didn't know they were a TV version of the Beatles. You know what I mean? So, Take On Me, do you hear me say?
Yeah.
A-ha were just such a massive, massive influence on me. It's funny. I wasn't a three piece. They're a three piece. The singer has black hair. There's a keyboardist. It's not unlike the Script. In the presentation of it. So maybe it went in, it burnt in, but the melodies were fantastic. The guy's falsetto was higher than a skyscraper, and the video was just incredible.
Yeah, okay. This will be familiar to kids who've never heard of a-ha but who know Harry Styles. This is Danny O'Donoghue's first choice. Take on
this
me.
This is where Harry Styles got his ideas from. Yeah.
Take on me. Okay, so that's Danny O'Donoghue's first choice. Actually, Dave Soman was just saying to me there, Danny, I don't know if you know it. A-ha did an MTV Unplugged. Have you heard it?
No.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Go check it out. Anyone should check it out. I completely kind of reevaluated them and their music. So listen, with the brothers being in bands then and your dad and everything, so was there a sense in your house that being a musician was a realistic ambition in life? It was something you could do, yeah?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I was, that's what I was kind of blessed with, was my, you know, my parents knew that you could make a living in music. And I think that's what I had over a lot of my friends, you know. A lot of my friends were like, okay, well, you got to go to school and you got to, you know, take the academic road. But my mum and dad, I actually left school just after, well, basically just after my leaving, or sorry, my intercert. My grades were okay, but like I said, I was sitting down the back of class writing songs, and I got the opportunity to go to a place called the Parnell School of Music, which they take you in on. They took me in my practical. So I went in and was able to play and sing for them. And then it must have been about 4 or 5 months in. I was only in that college a very short time, and I ended up getting a record deal in America. I was very young at the time. But my parents weren't the ones to kind of like second guess it the whole way. They were 100% all in from the get-go, and that's mother and father. And I think it's a very important thing to have both sides in on you as your career and following it. Obviously, if you don't have talent and everyone's telling you not to do it because you're not going to make
yes.
it, it's a tough thing to do, to go against the grain. But I think my dad had some semblance of whether it was going to work or not. You know, he had one of his partners in managing my brother's band, Big Draniums, was Louis Walsh. And, you know, when you're around people like that, you know when somebody has something or not and stuff. So, I had a great upbringing from a lot of...
Yeah, you were so lucky, weren't you? Yeah, and all those kinds.
Really, really lucky to have that, you know, and I'm very blessed, yeah.
Yeah. So your second choice then is something a little bit different. This is a beautiful song, Fire and Rain by James Taylor. Why this?
So, I guess after I went on my pop tangent with Take On Me, I then started to discover lyrics. I think as you graduate through, you know, the levels in music, you stop listening to the shiny stuff and then start listening to the lyrics. And Fire and Rain, my sister was actually a big fan of James Taylor. And I'd listen to, I think it was New Moonshine or one of his albums. And then I'd stumbled across the song Fire and Rain. And I'd listen to the lyrics and I loved the beauty and simplicity of them. But then when I got to find out what the song was actually about, it was about one of his loves had passed away from heroin. And in the first line, I woke up this morning and they let me know you were gone. I wrote a song and don't know who to send it to. And it's just like, the lyrics hit hard initially anyway, but then when you find out the story behind it, it hits that even harder. And it just fastly became one of my favorite songs as a kid. And it's the reason why I there was acoustics being played around me, but specifically I remember picking up the acoustic to go, I'm learning this song because it means so much to me, you know? So yeah, he would be the reason why I started playing guitar.
Okay, Danny O'Donoghue's second choice, Fire and Rain by James Taylor.
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans they made put an end to you. I walked out this morning and I wrote down this song. I just can't remember who to send it to.
Shivers, isn't it? That's Fire and Rain by James Taylor. That's Danny O'Donoghue's second choice. So listen, you mentioned a record contract in America. So explain to me how it was you and Mark, you ended up in LA working with people like Britney Spears, TLC, Boyz II Men. Like, how do two heads from Dublin talk themselves into that?
Well, we didn't talk each other into it. We talked the world into letting us do it, you know. it's a long story. I'll try and make it as short as I can. So I got, Mark was in a band called My Town, and they got a record deal. They got a showcase for a guy called Doug Morris, who was at the time was the most powerful man in the music industry. And one of their members had left the band in between showcases. And then I was drafted in because I could sing, and I've been in music for a long time, and I'd known Mark for years. A dance school that he used to teach at called Diggs Lane is where he used to teach breakdancing in there and stuff. And I was one of the dancers. And he picked me for the band. We then went over, we auditioned for the band. We ended up getting signed. Came back here, did the Smash Hits Road Show. I had such an amazing time. We toured the world, released the single. The single did well, but the album came out flopped. I'm saying flop, but sold a few, but wasn't as successful as, you know, it should have been. And then we kind of found ourselves in that precarious position of being, you know, very well known for getting signed and doing these things. And then we, through the record deal, had ended up working with a lot of these really top artists over in America, Blackstreet. We ended up working with Boyz II Men, Montel Jordan, the list goes on. Billy Steinberg, just all these incredible artists at the time, and it was, at the time it was really bittersweet because although they were amazing, I just felt like that's it for my career now. You know, I'm going to get to do now is to, you know, work with these people and maybe, you know, give them a Christmas card every year now because our career is over. But the friends that we'd made, and I guess we impressed them enough that we ended up getting calls to come back over time and time again. So myself and Mark decided, well, with the little money that we had left from the band, we'd head over to America and just see if we could try and make something happen. So we got a call from, Mark's wife, Rena, well, not at the time, but was a friend at the time, to say, I'm working on an album. She was down in this place called Johnny Wright's studio, and he used to manage Justin Timberlake, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, Britney. We just got our feet in the door. And you know what, an Irish person, you get your foot in the door, man. the whole family's in behind us. So, we went and, I never left. You know, I was lucky enough to get an O1V visa, which is a 3-year visa, because of the band. So I was like, put a time limit on it, 3 years, and let's just put our heads down and see what we can do. And I ended up, I lived there for almost 10 years. So okay. from around 17, 18 till I was 27, I lived in America. Some years were great, some years were really bad. And, but as the life of a musician, you go from the kindness of strangers to a moment where you can pay your rent for 3 months and then you're back, you know, borrowing and stealing for your next little bit, you know. But I loved it because it was the education of a lifetime on songwriter couches and, you know.
Yeah, and I think your next choice is then part of that education, part of the music that made up what you do now. Boyz II Men, Water Runs Dry. Why this?
Yeah, I just absolutely adore the song. I remember in Dublin just sitting, our house, we used to, the rock and roll room was in the back of the house and had a piano in it, guitar, bass, and there was a mattress on the ground. That's where I used to sleep. And this song came along, and I'm probably guaranteed at least 500 million streams of this online is because of me. I just used to sit and listen to it over and over and over. It was a big turning point for me in my head that I loved harmonies. It was my first introduction to, it was barbershop, but it's just the qualities of each of those voices and just how good they were in themselves.
Let's have a listen. This is Danny O'Donnell's third choice, Boyz II Men, Water Runs Dry.
We don't even talk anymore, and we don't even know what we argue about. Don't even say I love you no more. Saying how we feel is no longer allowed. Some people
So that's some sweet sounds there for Saturday morning. That is Boys to Men, Water Runs Dry, and that is Danny O'Donoghue from The Script's third music choice today. So Danny, you've a new album out. I got to listen to it. Are coming out in August. I got to listen to it, Satellites, and it's a terrific album. But as people will know, The Script is a slightly different band now. So Mark, you were talking about there, and obviously he was your bandmate, he was your co-writer, your partner in crime down the years, but he was also your best friend, and he died tragically young last year. And look, so sad, primarily obviously for his family, his wife and children, but your best friend dying so young, it's a very hard one for you, isn't it?
I mean, I'm still coming to terms with it, you know. I have good days, I have bad days, like anybody who's lost somebody, I guess, knows that you don't ever really get rid of the grief. You know, it's there and you just tend to try to grow around it. Gone too soon, way too soon. And I think after he passed away, I, you know, like everybody else, you've got every reason in the world to just go off the rails. So I spent the majority of all last year, you know, questioning everything, is there a God? Is there not? What am I doing in life? Can we continue on as The Script? And, you know, all those questions that you ask yourself in those moments. And I couldn't write, you know, I'd spent my whole life as a co-writer, and we wrote all our hits together, you know? It's still very tough to take and hard to deal with. The thing that I guess keeps us going is I know for a fact he's like, just finish what we started. You know, he's done so much for Irish music, and he's always worn, you know, Ireland like a badge on the sleeve, going around. He's proper ambassador for Ireland. And also, you know, here's the other side you don't see for men as well. He was a man's man. He was very stoic in his principles, never ever cheated on his wife, never ever would do anything untoward. He was always a family man. He was the first one off the bus home. If we were somewhere, he had a day off, he was straight back with his family and stuff. And I think not only I'm missing the best mate, but I think the world is missing somebody who's, you know, they could deal with someone who has his principles and morals like that man. It's the only thing we can do is to try and get over it, you know, in our own way, or try and at least move on, because you'll never get over it. What you can try and do is just build a bridge that might be able to get us over what's going on. So for me, you know, it's always been music. Music has always been the one thing that I can go to that helps me verbalize my pain, helps me, you know, put any kind of goodness to all the bad that goes on in the world. And I wrote this lyric. I had a writer's block last year, and I couldn't figure out why. I knew it was something to do with Mark, but it was like I was trying to say about him in lyric form what he meant to me. And the only thing I could come up with was, it was like a shooting star across the sky in the second you were gone. But why do stars that light up twice as bright only burn for half as long? And it was the first time where I felt like a thorn had been pulled out of my creative heart or something, and the lyrics just start flowing. So I wrote this song called Gone on the album, and it's not a sad song, and also it's not a sad album.
It's not at all. Yeah.
Any of the songs that are on there they're trying to make sense of what's going on. Like we've always done through the years, trying to make sense of the age I am in, the age we're living in, and what we need to do to move on. And when everything's trying to pull you down, to always just aim up, you know, try and look up. And, you know, here we are again. And that song, I can't wait for people to hear it, because I think they'll hear the sadness in the lyric of missing somebody, but also the ability to be able to celebrate somebody's life in a way that's positive and uplifting, as opposed to always being down and sad. So the album's just a really cathartic album for me.
Did you wonder if the band could go on?
Yeah, I'm still wondering if the band can go on. You know, even the hotel, like the hotel that I'm in today, is the one we always stayed in Scotland, you know, and it's really, all of it is very triggering. There's a lot of things, but I don't mind saying, telling everybody, because I feel it's like we're a window into other people's lives of what you can do. And, you know, like we did the album, we love making music together. That's what we know we love doing. We have a massive family that we've created over 17 years. And also, he was the leader of the band. And now all I do, I'm hearing him every day, get up, do this, work as hard as you possibly can. That lyric's not good enough. You know, finish what we started. All of these things. And I just hear him, Okay. Like, I don't know, you know, if you lose your own people, you hear them and they're around you regardless of what happens. So, yeah, it's, like I said, it's tough and it's evolving. You're just seeing me grieving in real time and I have to do it publicly, which is the worst part about it, you know?
Yeah. But look,
excuse the language. Sorry, I know I'm live. Sorry.
He's there anyway. Yeah. Listen, yeah. I don't think anyone would be judging either. Like, it's classically Irish to, when something like that happens, that your initial response was, I go on the batter for a while. Like, I think that's how a lot of Irish men handle grief initially, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. And I have to say, it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's wrong. I got back. I had an issue like Christmas time where I was saying, right, that's it. I'm going to have a sober Christmas. I'm coming home and I'm going to have a great Christmas and clear headed. And I didn't realize the power of what Dublin was. So as I was on the plane in the way, just the anxiety started building and building. Fucking ended up getting a drink. I landed in Dublin and I was pissed. And then I remained pissed for the rest of Christmas. And it was just not a good place to be at all. Mentally. So I got back on the 27th of December. I cut my Christmas early, went back to London and where I have the studio and where we were recording. I just said, that's it. I'm done. I'm finished drinking, finished smoking. Caffeine, anything that is like stimulants that can lead me towards a bad area.
Okay.
Get it out of my life.
And is that for good now? Is it?
It's for now. It's for now. Okay. Now I can't tell you. I'll go yeah, and then there'll be, you know, you'll see me falling out of
the
I don't want to put that pressure on myself.
Yeah, sorry. And I was doing it. Like, do you swear here and now that no one will ever see you take a drink again?
Okay. Take the pledge.
Fair enough.
No, it's just for here and now, and I didn't get to the point where it was like, you know, my life was falling apart or whatever. But it got to the point where I just went, in order for you to process all of this and not kick it down the road for later on, you need to be stone cold sober. And stone cold, when you're processing these feelings, we're making massive decisions with the band moving forward, his family, my family. Like, there's a lot of people involved, and generationally, that you make one wrong decision here and you can mess up some people's lives. And I feel like, you know, as soon as that song kind of came out around Christmas, about Mark, I just went, that's it, blinkers on, let's record an album, let's have everybody.
There's a phrase for this, Danny. You got your head out of your arse, yeah?
Yeah, I got my head right out of my arse.
Yeah.
And okay. But also, I did, but my friends did as well, my missus did.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the one who obviously, you know, heading down the halls, and they're the ones that have me by the ankles quite firmly. And, you know, and I don't mind saying, like, martial arts was a huge one. I started working out 3 times a week, went back boxing again. Sparring on a Sunday. I also then started going back to church. I go to church every day. Got a
really?
Mass every day.
Mass, Catholic mass, yeah?
Catholic mass, I go every day. I set the alarm, get up in the morning, don't look at my phone. I go to church and I sit there and I practice gratitude that for the life that I've been able to live so far. And also just to offer up prayers, because I go to the gym to work out. I go to the studio to make music. Where am I going to get spiritually what I need now? You know, because we live in a secular society where there's all the establishments were there. Let's take religion out of making decisions for people. And then the vacuum that's left is all the institutions that are there. They're all failing now as well. You can't trust government. You can't trust this. You can't trust that. And what happens is, if there's a void there, something else quite dark is going to come in. So I just felt myself going, you know, I'm not the biggest believer in all of it, but because I used to go to church. I was an altar boy years ago, and just the structure of it and what it does and the practice of it. I haven't touched a drink in 6 months. I feel better than I've ever felt considering the circumstances. And I don't know what it is that's there, but I know there's something there. So for me, I love it. I go every day and I don't miss a day.
Fair play. Okay, listen, you know what I'm going to do? The Beatles Day in a Life, I think, will we skip song number four. Or do you want? No, look, let's do it. Tell us briefly why you picked the Beatles' "Day in a Life," and we play a snatch of it because it is great.
Cool. I picked this song because I was I must have been 15 or 16, and you know, as a kid, you get to dabble around. I smoked my first. Had a little puff off the wacky backy when I was younger, and I ended up. I was watching. I was in a mate's house, and he put on "Day in the Life" by the Beatles, and it absolutely blew my mind.
Yeah.
Okay. And I remember just sitting there. We had the lights off. We were just came home from school, lights off, and we listened to that album, and it was life changing for me. It was life changing for me because it set me off in a different direction.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who had a similar experience. Okay, here's "Day in the Life." I noticed I was late. Found my coat and grabbed my hat. Made the bus in seconds flat. Found my way upstairs and had a smoke. And somebody spoke and I went into a dream. There you go, the Beatles' "Day in a Life." That opened a lot of people's minds in its day, and it opened Danny O'Donoghue's mind as well. Danny, before we go to the final choice, so the single's out now. The album, the single is great, actually. We'll play it at the end of the show. The album "Satellites" is out in August. And then you're going to do 2 nights in Belfast. You're doing 3 in Dublin. It's going to be strange. I know Ben was always with you on bass. He'll be a full band member now. But new guitarist, it's like you talk about the hotel being triggering. It will be strange for you, won't it?
Yeah, it will. Yeah, it will. But I also feel like it's going to be a celebration as well. I know there's obviously going to be a lot of emotion in the room. I'm hoping, you know, Mark's family's going to be there, all our families. And I think we've all been on this ride together, you know, even when I say the fans, but Ireland in general, there's a whole generation of people who've grown up and never known a world without the script, if you know what I mean. And I think it's, you know, like these shows that we're doing now, there's a massive community of people who still want to grieve Mark and still want to show their support and also go somewhere where they can let it out. And that's what we feel that those shows are going to be. You know, like I said, I'm excited about them. I'm also, it will be triggering. I'm sure
they'll be,
like everyone
they'll
knows
be very, very special nights. I can imagine they're going to be very special.
I think so too. I wear my heart on my sleeve anyway, and I you know, I'm sure there's going to be a few tears shed on those nights, either on stage or after or whatever. But like I said, people know I'm not scared of cut myself open and let everybody see what's on the inside. You know, we're human at the end of the day. You know.
Yeah. So your final music choice, Bob Dylan's "The Times They Are Changing." Where does this song take you to?
You know, this song is just is one of the best songs ever written lyrically. You know, you could play that song right now, which you're probably going to do, and it just sounds exactly like the same thing that's going on today.
Yeah.
You know, those timeless songs are the ones that they speak of the human condition, and there's some things that are very cyclical in life and that come around again and again, and it just goes to show just the reason why you got a bloody Nobel Prize for lyrics for music is because he's that good. And this was a time where I think he was firing on absolutely all cylinders and firing at everybody else, you know, with his guns. It's such a beautiful song, and again, if anybody can beat this song out, fair play, you deserve a Nobel Peace Prize.
Okay. Danny O'Donoghue, can I say that I wasn't expecting that conversation with you at all. And thank you so much for being so open and so generous and everything. And I think a lot of people will have got a lot out of that. So the script...
No worries at all. It's probably supposed to be lighthearted, but you know, you get to go there sometimes.
Listen, life is life. The script's new single, Both Ways, is out now. The album Satellites is out on Friday, August the 16th. But we'll end now on Danny's final music choice. Danny, thank you very, very, very much. And take it away, Bob Dylan.
Yeah. People, wherever you roam,
and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving,